like everyone in town did. Interesting. Out of curiosity, who told you to come see me about this? Was it Francis Levin? That's right. Is it possible that Francis also shared with you a piece of shocking news about our prospects going forward? And when I say our, I of course mean the human race. Tell me about Hassler. We're all going to be starving to death in a matter of years. Do you really think you're up to solving that problem, Ethan? Ready for that weight on your shoulders? What are you going to do? Put it to a vote? Look, I messed up, I realize that, but you need me. You all need me. Ethan struggled onto his feet, started for the door. Okay, okay. At first it was just a standard bribe, Pilcher said. What's a standard bribe? Money. To buy Adam's silence for you, Kate Hewson, and Bill Evans. To shut down the investigation into your disappearance. But then something changed. He decided he wanted to come along with me and my crew. Be a part of our journey. Ethan cocked his right arm back and punched the door. The blood from his busted knuckles smeared across the steel. He hit the door again. Between you and me, Pilcher said, I always thought Hassler was an arrogant prick. I let him have one good year in Wayward Pines, and then I sent him out on a suicide mission beyond the fence. He never returned. Ethan shouted for the guard. You need me, Pilcher said. You know you need me. If something isn't done, we'll die out in a matter of it's not your concern anymore. Excuse me? The guard opened the door. How did you like your supper? Ethan asked. What? Your supper. How was it? Terrible. Sorry about that. Especially considering it was your last. What does that mean? Remember when you asked me what was going to happen to you, and I said that's for the people to decide? Well, they did. We took a vote a few hours ago, right after we finished burying all the people you murdered. And it's happening tonight. Ethan walked out into the corridor as Pilcher screamed his name. Late afternoon, the sun already behind the cliffs, the sky sheeted over with a uniform deck of clouds that seemed to threaten snow. The power in town had yet to be restored, but still a handful of people had returned to their homes to begin the process of cleaning up, of trying to reassemble the pieces of a life that could never be made right again. In the distance, the pile of abbeys still burned. Ethan wasn't sure what it was, maybe the lateness of the day, the darkening clouds, the cold, gray indifference of the towering cliffs. But Wayward Pines felt, possibly for the first time since he'd come here, like exactly what it was. The last town on Earth. He parked on the curb in front of his Victorian house on 6th Street. The vibrant yellow and the white trim struck him as off-key in light of the past few days. They didn't live anymore in a world where life was to be colorful and celebrated. Life had become something you clung to, that you bit down hard on against the pain, like the rubber block in a session of electroshock therapy. Ethan jarred open the Jeep's door with his shoulder and stepped down onto the street. The neighborhood stood silent, joyless, tense. There were no bodies visible, but a large bloodstain still marred the pavement nearby. It would take a day of solid rain to wash it away. He stepped over the curb. From the front yard, at least, his house looked intact. No windows broken, no door smashed down. He walked the flagstone path and stepped up onto the porch. The floorboards creaked. It was getting on toward evening. He pulled open the screen door, pushed open the solid wood door. It was dark and cold inside, and Adam Hassler sat in the rocking chair beside the dormant wood stove, looking like a wasted version of the man Ethan remembered. "The hell are you doing in my house?" Ethan's voice came out like a low growl. Hassler looked over, his cheekbones and orbital rims pronounced from starvation. He answered,
Believe me, I was just as surprised to see you.
Suddenly they were on the floor, Ethan struggling to get his hands around Hassler's neck so he could squeeze the fucking life right out of him. He'd assumed that Hassler's emaciated state would make overpowering him simple, but the man's wiry strength was resilient. Hassler torqued his hips and flipped Ethan onto his back. Ethan swung, his fist glancing off Hassler's shoulder. Hassler returned with a hard, stunning blow. Ethan's world went pyrotechnic. He tasted blood, felt it sliding down his face as his nose burned. Hassler said,
"You never knew what you had."
He threw another punch, but Ethan caught his arm at the elbow and jerked it the wrong way. Hassler cried out as the ligament stretched. Ethan shoved him into the toppled rock chair and scrambled up, looking for a weapon, something hard and heavy. Hassler regained his feet, advanced in a boxer's stance. Too dark in the living room for Ethan to see the punches coming. Hassler connected a jab, then a hard right hook that might have turned Ethan's lights out if Hassler wasn't in such a weakened state. Still, it snapped Ethan's neck and spun him 90 degrees as Hassler delivered a devastating kidney shot. Ethan screamed out, stumbling back into the foyer as Hassler kept coming, calm and controlled.
"It's a mismatch," Hassler said. "I'm just better than you. Always was."
Ethan's fingers wrapped around the iron coat rack.
"I even loved your wife better than you could," Hassler said.
Ethan sent the hard metal base arcing through the air. Hassler ducked. It punched a hole through the drywall. Hassler charged, but Ethan caught him with an elbow to the jaw, and the man's knees buckled. Ethan landed his first direct hit to Hassler's face, his cheekbone crunching under the blow, and it felt so goddamn good that Ethan hit him again, and again, and again. Hassler growing weaker, Ethan stronger, and with each punch, the need to do more damage grew exponentially. The fear inside of him breaking out in a whirlwind of violence. Fear of what this man could do. Fear of what Hassler could take away from him. Fear of losing Teresa. Ethan let go of Hassler's neck, and the man moaned on the floor. Ripping the coat rack out of the wall, he clutched the metal in his hands and raised the heavy base over Hassler's head. "I'm gonna kill him." Hassler looked up at him, his face a bloody mess, one eye already swollen shut and the other filling with the realization of what was coming. He said,
"Do it."
"You sent me here to die," Ethan said. "Was it for the money, or so you could have my wife?"
"She deserves so much better than you."
"Did Teresa know that you orchestrated all of this so you could be with her?"
"I told her I came here looking for you and that I was involved in a car wreck. She was happy with me, Ethan. Truly happy."
For a long moment, Ethan stood over Hassler on the brink of caving in the man's skull, wanting to do it, not wanting to be the man who would. He threw the coat rack across the living room and collapsed on the hard wood next to Hassler, his kidney throbbing. "We're here because of you," Ethan said. "My wife, my son."
"We're here because 2,000 years ago you fucked Kate Hewson and destroyed your wife. If Kate had never transferred to Boise, she never would have come to Wayward Pines. Pilcher never would have abducted her and Bill Evans.
And you never would have sold me out.
Just to be clear, you'd be dead right now if I hadn't—"
"No. We'd have lived out our lives in Seattle."
"You call what you and Teresa had a life? She was miserable. You were in love with another woman. You want to sit there and tell me what I did was wrong?
You seriously just said that?"
"There's no right or wrong anymore, Ethan. There's only survival. I learned that in my 3.5 years wandering around the hell beyond the fence. So don't look at me hoping to catch a glimpse of regret."
"It's kill or be killed now? Is that where we're at?"
"We were always there."
"So why didn't you kill me?" Hassler smiled, blood between his teeth.
"When you walked back to the superstructure from Kate's house last night, I was there, in the woods. It was dark, and it was just you and me. I had my boy knife. The same one I killed Abby's with in hand-to-talon combat you couldn't even fathom. You don't know how close I came. Ethan felt something cold inch down his spine. What stopped you? He asked. Hassler wiped blood out of his eyes. I've been thinking about that. I think it's because I'm not as hard as I'd like to be. See, in my head, I know there's no right or wrong, but my heart hasn't made that connection. My 21st century hardwiring is too deep, too institutional. My conscience intrudes. Ethan stared at his old boss through the mounting darkness in the living room. Where does this leave us? Ethan asked. The best moments of my life I lived right here. With Teresa. With your son. Hassler groaned as he hoisted himself up into a sitting position against the wall. Even in the low light, Ethan could see the man's jaw beginning to swell, Hassler's words now coming lopsided, garbled. I'll walk away, he said. Forever. One condition. You think you're entitled to a condition? Teresa never hears about what really happened. You'd just be doing this so she goes on loving you. She chose you, Ethan. What? She chose you. Relief swept over him. His throat ached with emotion. Now that it's over, Hassler said, I don't want her to know. Respect that wish, and I'll make an impossible situation possible. There is another option, Ethan said. What's that? I could kill you. Do you have that in you, old friend? Because if so, knock yourself out. Ethan looked at the cold wood stove, into the evening light coming through the windows, wondered how this house could ever feel like home again. I'm not a murderer, Ethan said. See? We're both too soft for this new world. Ethan got up. You were out there for 3.5 years? He asked. That's right. So you know more about this new world than any of us. Probably so. What if I were to tell you that we couldn't stay in Wayward Pines any longer? That we needed to leave this valley and go someplace warmer, where crops could be grown. Do you think we'd have a chance? Of surviving as a group on the other side of the fence? Yeah. That sounds like mass suicide. But if we truly have no choice? If it's stay in this valley and die or take a chance heading south? I guess we'd have to find a way. On his way up to the cafeteria, Ethan stopped again at the cage of the female Abby. She was sleeping, curled up in a corner against the wall, thinner, frailer even than the last time he'd seen her. One of the lab techs who worked in the Abby holding facility moved past Ethan, heading toward the stairwell. Hey, Ethan called after him. The white-jacketed scientist stopped in the middle of the corridor, turned to face him. Is she sick, or what? Ethan asked. The young scientist flashed an ugly smile. She's starving to death. You're starving her? No. She refuses to eat or drink. Why? The man shrugged. No idea. Maybe because we made a bonfire out of all her cousins? The scientist chuckled to himself and continued on down the corridor. Ethan found Teresa and Ben at a corner table in the packed cafeteria. When she saw the bruises on his face, her eyes, tear-swollen and red, went wide. What happened? She asked. Have you been crying? We'll talk later. Dinner consisted of packages of freeze-dried horror, lasagna for Ethan, beef stroganoff for Ben, eggplant parm for Teresa. All Ethan could think about was how much food this single meal was costing them. 250 of those chrome-colored packages. One meal closer to nothing. And no one had any concept of how fast the supplies were dwindling. just took for granted that they could walk into this cafeteria, or down to the community gardens, or the town grocery, and find food. Where would the civility go when it all ran out?
"You want to talk about what's going to happen later tonight, Ben?" Ethan asked.
"Not really." "You don't have to go if you don't want to see it, sweetheart," Teresa said.
"I want to see it. This is his punishment for what he did, right?"
"Yeah," Ethan said. "And we have to do it, you understand, because there aren't courts anymore. No judges or juries. We have to watch out for ourselves, and that man hurt a lot of people. It has to be made right."
After dinner, Ethan sent Ben back to their quarters and asked Teresa to take a walk with him.
"So Hassler and I had it out," he said, as they trudged up the stairs.
"Jesus, Ethan, what are you, in high school?"
3 doors down on the right-hand side of the level 4 corridor, Ethan swiped his card at the reader and pulled open a heavy steel door. They stepped onto a small platform. Ethan said, "Hold on to the railing," and pressed the up arrow button. The platform accelerated through the rocky tube at the speed of an express elevator. 400 feet straight up. When it finally shuddered to a stop, they stepped off onto a catwalk that ran for 20 feet until it terminated at a second steel door. Ethan swiped his card again. The lock buzzed. He pulled open the door, and they moved outside into a wall of shocking cold.
"What is this place?" Teresa asked.
"Discovered it a few nights ago when I was up and couldn't sleep. The clouds from earlier had blown out. The stars were stunning, bright and sharp." They stood in a path that had been carved 3 feet down into rock. On either side, the mountain fell away into oblivion. He said, "I think people come up here to smoke, to get fresh air. It's the fastest way to see actual daylight without having to take the tunnel into town. They call this trail the Sunroof."
"How far does it go?"
"All through these high peaks. If you stay with it, I'm told it winds down into the forest west of the Cirque." They strolled the Knife Edge Ridge. Ethan said, "After we beat the shit out of each other, Adam and I talked."
"That sounds like borderline adult behavior."
"He said you chose me." Teresa stopped, faced him. He could feel the cold nibbling at the edges of his cheeks.
"It came down to a pretty simple choice for me, Ethan. Would I rather love or be loved?"
"What are you talking about?"
"Adam would do anything for—"
"So would I.
Will you listen? I told you I'd never been loved the way Adam loves me, and I meant that. But I've never loved anyone the way I love you. There are times I hated myself for it, because I felt weak. When I wished I could have just hardened myself to you and walked away, but I could never do it. Even after Kate. It's like you've got some kind of hold on me. It's a precious thing, Ethan, and you'd better care for it. You've hurt me before. Badly.
I know I've fucked up in the past. I know I haven't treated you the way you deserved to be treated.
Ethan, no, now it's my turn. I ruined things. Hell, I ruined everything. With my work, with Kate, with not dealing with my shit from the war. But I'm trying, Teresa. Ever since I woke up in this town, I've been trying. Trying to protect you and Ben. Trying to love you the best that I possibly could. Trying to make the right choices.
I know you have. I see it. I see what we could be. It's all I want. All I've ever wanted.
She kissed him.
You have to promise me something, Ethan.
What?
That you'll go easy on Adam. We all have to live together in this valley now.
Ethan stared down into Teresa's face, resisting the urge to tell her everything that man had done. He said finally,
I'll try. For you.
Thank you.
They walked on.
What's wrong, honey? She asked.
Everything.
No, there's something more. Something new.
You were weird at dinner.
Ethan looked into the canyon 3,000 feet below. It was only a month ago he'd had his first encounter with the Abbeys down there, and as harrowing as that experience had been, at least he'd known hope then. He'd still believed the world was out there, that if only he could escape this town, these mountains, his family and his life would be waiting for him in Seattle.
Ethan?
We're in trouble.
I'm aware.
No, I mean we're not going to make it. As a species. A meteor crossed the sky.
Ethan, I've been here a lot longer than you have. It feels hopeless sometimes, and now more than ever, but we have everything we need in Wayward Pines.
The food's running out, he said. That stuff we ate tonight? Those freeze-dried meals? There isn't an endless supply, and once it's gone, we're not going to be able to grow enough food in this valley to get us through the long, hard winters. If we're farther south, we could make it work, but we're trapped in this valley. I'm sorry to tell you this, but I don't want to keep anything from you. No more secrets. I need you in my corner because I don't know what to do.
How long do we have? Teresa asked.
4 years.
And then what happens?
And then we die.
Hassler. He crossed the river on the east side of town, his legs numb by the time he stumbled out of the water and onto the far shore. On all fours, he scrambled up through the pines that clung to the steepening hillside. Up, up, up. 100 feet above town, the terrain went vertical, but he didn't stop, kept fighting his way up the cliff, higher and higher. Climbing without fear, without care. He couldn't believe he was actually scaling the suicide cliff. During that year he'd lived in town with Teresa, two people had ascended this stretch of rock and leapt to their deaths. There were plenty of other fatal options on the cliffs that surrounded Wayward Pines, but this particular precipice had the benefit of being the most sheer. No chances of accidentally bungling the jump and taking an unnecessary bounce off a ledge. If one made it to the top without falling, they could bank on an uninterrupted plummet into oblivion. Hassler topped out 500 feet above the valley on a long ledge. He collapsed on the cold granite, his jaw throbbing, probably broken. It was night, and the town lay dark beneath him, paved streets glowing softly under the starlight. His pant legs had frozen stiff. As the chill set in, he thought about his life, and the peace he arrived at as he staggered onto his feet again was this. Out of 38 years, one had been magic. He'd lived in a canary-yellow house with the love of his life, and there hadn't been a day he'd woken up beside Teresa that he didn't know how good he had it. He ached for more time with her, but the fact that he'd had any time at all? It was enough. Enough to cling to. It took him a moment before he found their home down there in the dark. Fixing his gaze on it, he saw it not as it was, empty and dark, but rather as it had been in the soft, cool light of those summer evenings as he'd walked toward the front porch, toward everything he loved. He stepped to the edge. He wasn't afraid. Not of death, not of pain. He'd experienced enough agony on his nomadic mission for several lifetimes, and death was something he'd long since prepared for. If anything, it held for him, at least, the promise of peace. He bent his knees to leap. A noise pulled him out of the moment like a ripcord. He turned, couldn't see much of anything in the darkness, but he realized it was the sound of someone crying. He said, "Hello?" The crying stopped. A woman's voice asked,
"Who's there?"
"Are you all right?"
"If I was, do you think I'd be up here?"
"Yeah, I guess that's a fair point. Do you want me to come over?"
"No."
Hassler stepped back from the ledge, eased down onto the rock.
"You shouldn't do this," he said.
"Excuse me? What the hell are you doing up here? I could tell you the same damn thing."
"Yeah, except I actually should be up here."
"Why?" because your life is so terrible, too.
Do you want to hear my sob story?
No. I wanted to have jumped by now. I'd finally worked up the nerve when this asshole interrupted me. This is the second time I've climbed up here.
What happened the first? Hassler asked.
It was daylight and I hate heights. I chickened out.
Why are you up here? He asked.
I'll tell you as long as you don't try to save me.
Deal.
The woman sighed. I lost my husband when the Abbeys came into town.
Sorry to hear that. Were you two married in Wayward Pines?
Yes, and I know what you're thinking, but I loved him. I also loved this other man who's here. Crazy thing is, we knew each other in our lives before. He's here with his wife and son, and when he came to tell me that my husband had been killed, I asked him if his family had survived.
Had they?
Yeah, but you know what? There was a part of me, a bigger part than I want to admit, that was actually sad she had lived. Don't get me wrong, I miss my husband terribly. But I kept thinking,
if his wife had been killed, then the two of you...
Right. So on top of losing my husband, on top of the fact that I can't be with this man I love, it also turns out I'm a shitty human being.
Hassler laughed.
Did you laugh at me?
No, I just think it's cute that you think that's horrible. Do you want to hear horrible?
Hit me.
In my life before, I loved a woman, but she was married to this guy who worked for me. I arranged a chain of events so that her husband would be removed from the picture. See, I knew what this town was as it was being created 2,000 years ago. I made certain this woman was abducted by David Pilcher, and then I volunteered to go into suspension so I could be with her when she woke up. We lived together in Wayward Pines, and she never knew she was here because of me. After a year, I was sent away on a mission beyond the fence. I was never supposed to return. Every day I was out there, it was the thought of her that kept me going, kept me breathing, putting one foot in front of the other. Against impossible odds, I made it back. I thought I'd be returning to her, to a hero's welcome. But instead, I find that her husband is here, and the town has been destroyed. Down in the darkness of the valley, tiny points of firelight had begun to gather on Main Street. Watching them, Hassler said, "So I climbed up here to take my life. You thought about bad things? I did them. Does that shift things back into perspective?"
"Why are you up here?" she asked.
"I just told you."
"No, I mean, is it because you can't live with what you did, or because you can't be with her?"
"Because I can't be with her. Look, I'm not going to stop loving her just because her husband's around. That's not the way the human heart works. I can't just amputate what I feel. It's not like we live in a big, wide world anymore where I can just move to another city, another state. There's no alternate life waiting out there for me to get on with. This is it. We're down to what? 250 people? I can't avoid her, and what I feel for her has defined me for so long now, I don't know the person I'd be if I tried to walk away from it."
"I hear that."
"And the funny thing is, as bad as I am, I don't have it in me to murder her husband. Is there a fate worse than being halfway evil?"
For a moment, the only sound was the lonely whisper of wind blowing across the rock. The woman finally said, "I know you, Adam Hassler."
"How?"
"I used to work for you."
"Kate?"
"Is life weird, or what?"
"I can leave you alone now, if..."
"I'm not judging you, Adam." He heard her get up, move toward him. In a minute, she emerged out of the darkness, still just a shadow, and sat down beside him, their feet hanging off the edge together.
"Are your pants frozen, too?" he asked.
"Yeah, I'm freezing my ass off. Do you think it means something that you and I both climbed up here to jump on the same night?"
"What do you mean?"
"Like, is the universe saying don't? Can't we agree that the universe doesn't give a shit anymore, and probably never did?" Kate looked over at him. "I don't care if we jump together or climb down together. But whichever it is, let's not do it alone."
Pilcher.
Someone grabbed his arm and pulled him down out of the truck. It was the first time he'd been outside in days, but he couldn't see anything through the black hood over his head. "What's happening?" Pilcher asked. The hood was ripped off. He saw lights, 50, 60, maybe 100 of them. Flashlights, torches, held by the residents of Wayward Pines and by his own people from the mountain, all of whom surrounded him in a tight circle of bodies. As his eyes adjusted, he saw the buildings on Main Street looming above him, their facades and storefronts awash in firelight. Two men stood with him in the circle, Ethan Burke and Alan Spear, his head of security. Ethan approached. "What is this?" Pilcher asked. "You throwing a fate for me?" He looked around at all the faces, hidden in shadow, distorted by firelight, angry and intense.
"We took a vote," Ethan said.
"Who voted?"
"Everyone except you."
A fate was on the table, but in the end it didn't feel right, putting you to death in the same manner you forced these people to police themselves. Ethan took a step closer, his breath clouding in the cold. "Look at these people, David. Everyone here lost family, lost friends, because of you." Pilcher smiled against the rage, the murderous, soul-melting rage. "Because of me?" he asked. "That's hysterical!" He stepped away from Ethan, moving out into the middle of the circle. "What else could I have possibly done for you people? I gave you food. I gave you shelter. I gave you purpose. I protected you from the knowledge you couldn't handle, from the harsh truth of the world that exists beyond the fence. And each of you had to do one thing, one goddamn thing." He shrieked the words. "Obey me!" He caught the stare of a woman standing several feet away, the tears glistening as they ran down her cheeks. So many tears in this crowd. So much pain. And once upon a time, he might have given a shit. But tonight, he only saw ingratitude, entitlement, rebelliousness. He screamed, "What more could I have fucking done for you?" "They're not going to answer you," Ethan said. "Then what is this?" "They're here to walk with you." "Walk where?" Ethan turned to the nearest section of the crowd. "Would you all make way, please?" As they parted, Ethan said, "After you, David." Pilcher stared down the dark street. He looked at Ethan. "I don't understand." "Start walking." "Ethan," someone shoved him from behind, and when Pilcher regained his balance, he turned to see Alan glaring at him with a lethal intensity.
"Sheriff said to go," Alan said. "Now I'm telling you, and if you can't make your legs work, we'll be happy to drag you by your arms."
Pilcher started walking south down Main Street, between the dark buildings, Ethan on one side, Alan on the other. The crowd followed the three men like a vigil, and an uneasy silence descended. No one spoke. There was no sound but footsteps scraping the pavement and the occasional muffled sob. He tried to hold it together, but his mind was frantic. Where were they taking me? Back to the superstructure? To a place of execution? They passed the Aspen House, and then the hospital. As everyone moved down the road into the forest south of town, Pilcher realized what was going to happen. He looked over at Ethan.
the fear sweeping through him like a shot of liquid nitrogen. Somehow he kept walking. At the curve in the road, everyone stepped off the pavement and headed into the woods, Pilcher thinking, I never even looked back, never got one last glimpse of Wayward Pines. A shallow layer of mist had pooled in the forest, and the torchlights looked otherworldly cutting through it, like disembodied points of fire. Pilcher was growing colder by the minute. He heard the buzzing of the fence. They were walking beside it. Then they were standing at the gate. It had all happened so fast, as if no time had passed since they'd removed his hood in the middle of Main Street. Ethan offered a small backpack to Pilcher. There's some food and water inside. Enough for several days if you last that long. Pilcher just stared at the pack. You all didn't have the guts to actually kill me yourselves? He asked. No, Ethan said. Just the opposite, actually. We all wanted it too much. We wanted to torture you. To let each person left standing take their pound of flesh out of you. Do you not want the pack? Pilcher grabbed it, slung the strap over his shoulder. Ethan went to the control panel and punched in the manual power override. The humming stopped. The woods became quiet. Pilcher looked at all his people, those from town, those from the mountain, the last human faces he would ever lay eyes upon. You ungrateful fucks! You'd all have died 2,000 years ago if it wasn't for me. I created a paradise for you. Heaven on earth. I'm your god, and you have the audacity to kick God out of heaven? I think you got your scripture wrong, Ethan said. God didn't get exiled. It was the other guy. Ethan opened the gate. Pilcher looked at Ethan, long and hard, and then glared out at the crowd. He crossed out of safety to the other side of the fence. Ethan shut the gate. Soon, the lines resumed their protective hum. Pilcher watched as the crowd turned away from him, the flashlights and torchlights receding into the mist. Then he was standing alone in the cold, dark forest. He headed south until the hum of the fence became inaudible. The starlight coming through the tops of the pines was insufficient to light his way. When his legs became tired, he sat down against the trunk of a pine tree. Far off, a mile or so away, an abbey screamed. Another one answered, much, much closer. And then another. Pilcher heard the sound of footsteps. Out there in the dark, something was running. Running toward him. Ethan. At first light, Ethan drove out of the superstructure in one of the security team's Dodge Rams, his son riding beside him in the passenger seat. Through the trees, the boulders. Then Ethan pulled onto the main road, heading south out of town. At the hairpin curve, he turned off into the woods and steered down the embankment, weaving carefully between the trees. When they reached the fence, Ethan turned parallel to it and drove until they arrived back at the gate. He killed the engine. The hum of the current moving through the barbed steel lines could be heard even from inside the truck. Do you think Mr. Pilcher is dead yet? Ben asked. I have no idea. But the Abbeys will eventually get him, right? That's a certainty. Ben glanced back through the rear window into the bed of the truck. I don't understand, he said. Why are we doing this, Dad? Because I haven't been able to stop thinking about that thing back there. Now Ethan looked into the truck bed. The female Abbey from the superstructure sat motionless in a plexiglass cage, staring out into the woods. It's strange, Ethan said. The world belongs to them now, but we still possess something they don't have. What? Kindness. Decency. That's what it is to be human. At our best, at least. Ben looked confused. I think this Abbey is different, Ethan said. What do you mean? She has an intelligence, a gentleness I haven't seen in any of the others. Maybe she has a family she wants to see again.
We should shoot her and burn her with all the rest.
And what would that accomplish? Feed our anger for a few minutes? What if we did the opposite? What if we sent her out into her world with a message about the species that once lived in this valley? I know it's crazy, but I'm holding tight to the idea that a small act of kindness can have real resonance. Ethan opened the door, stepped out into the forest.
What do you mean?
Ben asked.
Like it might change the Abbeys? Maybe more would become like her?
Ethan walked around to the back of the truck, lowered the tailgate. He said, "Species evolve. In the beginning, man was a hunter-gatherer, communicated through grunts and gestures. Then we invented agriculture and language. We became capable of kindness. But that took thousands of years. We'll all be dead before that ever happens." Ethan smiled. "You're right, son. It would take a long, 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 long time." He turned to face the Abbey. She sat peacefully in her cage, eyes still heavy from the sedative Ethan had ordered the scientist to administer. Pulling his Desert Eagle from the holster, he climbed up into the bed, threw the locks on the cage, and eased the door open several inches. Something between a purr and a growl rumbled in the Abbey's throat. Ethan said, "I'm not going to hurt you." He backed slowly away, climbed down out of the truck bed. The Abbey watched him. After a moment, she pushed the cage door open with her long left arm and crept out.
"What if it does something?" Ben asked. "What if it attacks?"
"She's not going to hurt us. She knows my meaning." Ethan caught her eyes. "Don't you?" He started toward the fence, the Abbey following sluggishly, several paces behind. At the gate, he typed in the code for the manual power override and waited as the bolts unlatched. The fence went silent. He shoved the gate open with his boot. "Go on," Ethan said. "You're free now." The Abbey watched him warily as she slunk past, squeezing herself through the opening, out into her world.
"Dad, do you think we'll ever be able to live side by side with them?"
10 feet out, the Abbey shot a glance back at Ethan. Her head tilted. She watched him for a beat, and he could have sworn she had something to say, her eyes brimming with intelligence and understanding. There were no words, but Ethan understood. And all at once, it came to him. "Yes," he said. "I do." He blinked, and she was gone. Ethan sat with Teresa on one of the park benches, watching Ben, who stood in the middle of the field, staring up at the sky. A couple 100 feet above, a kite skirted along on the breeze. It had taken the boy several tries to get the kite up and out of the still air near the surface, but the patch of red was now a fixture against the perfect blue, twirling around on the currents. It was a nice thing to sit and watch a child with a kite, and it was the first morning in days, maybe weeks, that didn't feel like winter.
"Ethan, that's insane."
"If we stay in this valley," he said, "we all die in a matter of years. There's not even a question. So why put it to a vote?"
"You let the people decide."
"What if you let the people decide?" "People get it wrong."
"That's true, but you have to figure out what kind of a leader you're going to be."
"I know what the right decision is, Teresa."
"So sell your idea to them."
"It's a hard sell. It's risky. And what happens if they make the wrong choice? Even you're on the fence."
"It's our wrong choice to make, honey. If you're willing to force this on people, then what was the point of ever telling them the truth about Wayward Pines?"
"I caused all of this," Ethan said. "All the death, the suffering and loss. I turned our lives inside out. Now I just want to fix it."
"Are you okay?"
"I'm terrified." She took his hand into hers. "You're not just asking me to trust the people with their fate. You're asking me to trust them with yours, with Ben's.
Their son sprinted across the field, dragging the kite behind him, laughing. The day I broke into the superstructure, Pilcher told me that I would come to understand the things he did, the choices he made.
And do you now?
I'm starting to feel the weight that was on his shoulders.
He didn't trust his people to make the right choices, Teresa said, because he was afraid. But you don't have to be, Ethan. If you do what you know in your heart is right, if you give people the freedom to choose their own fate, their own destiny,
we could starve to death in this valley.
That's true. But you won't have to compromise your integrity. That's the only thing you really have to fear.
That night, Ethan stood where it had all begun, on the bare stage in the opera house, under the burn of the lights, with the last 250 people on the planet looking on. "Here we are," he said to the crowd. "Humanity at the end of the world. We're here right now because of the choice I made to tell everyone the truth about Wayward Pines. Don't think I've missed that. Many of you lost loved ones. We've all suffered. I'll live with my decision and what it cost for the rest of my life, but right now, it's time to consider the future. In fact, it's all I've been thinking about this past week." The core group of Pilcher's inner circle sat together offstage left, Francis Levin, Alan, Marcus, Mustin, all watching him. The quiet in the theater was absolute, a coiled silence. "I know we're all trying to figure out where we go from here," he said. "What happens next? What our lives might look like? We have some hard truths to face, and we need to face them together, right now. Here's the first one. Our food is running out." Gasps and whispers trickled through the crowd. Someone shouted, "How long?" "About 4 years," Ethan said. "Which brings us to the second hard truth. We can't stay in this valley. I mean, we could. Until the next fence failure. Until a winter comes like we've never imagined. Until the food supply is exhausted. Francis Levin is here from the superstructure, and he can walk you all through the particulars, explain exactly why our lives are no longer sustainable in Wayward Pines. But I didn't drag you down here just to be the bearer of bad news. I also have a proposal for a new course of action, something radical and dangerous and daring, a leap in the dark." Ethan found Teresa in the crowd. "To be honest, I debated even proposing this as a choice. A friend of mine recently said to me that sometimes we find ourselves in situations that are so life and death. One or two strong leaders need to call the shots. But I think we're all finished with having our lives controlled. I don't know how, but we're going to find our way through this. What it comes down to for me is that I'd rather us make bad decisions as a group than to live in the absence of freedom. That was the old way. That was Pilcher's way. So all I ask is that you hear me out, and then we'll decide what to do. Together. Like free human beings." 10. 1 month later. Ethan. There were still moments like this one, with the power back on and the smell of Teresa's cooking emanating from the kitchen, when it all felt normal, like it could have been any weeknight in Ethan's life before. Ben upstairs in his bedroom. Ethan sitting in the study, jotting down notes for tomorrow. Out the window, in the evening light, he could see Jennifer Rochester's dark house. She'd been killed in the invasion, and the recent cold had murdered her garden as well. But the street lamps were back on, the crickets chirping through speakers in a distant bush. He missed Hector Gaither's piano, the sound of it coming through the radios in all the houses of Wayward Pines. Would have loved to lose himself in the music one last time. For just a moment, sitting in the oversized chair, Ethan shut his eyes and let the normalcy wash over him, tried to push the fragility out of his mind. But it wasn't possible. There was no coming to terms with the fact that he was a member of a species on the verge of extinction.
It filled every moment with meaning. It filled every moment with horror.
He walked into the kitchen to the smell of pasta boiling and spaghetti sauce thickening.
"Smells amazing," he said.
Moving up behind Teresa at the stove, he wrapped his arms around her waist and kissed the back of her neck.
"Last meal in Wayward Pines," she said.
"We're going big tonight. I'm cleaning out the fridge.
Put me to work. I can wash those dishes."
Stirring the sauce, she said, "I think it's probably all right to leave them."
Ethan laughed.
"Right. Of course it was." Teresa wiped her eyes.
"You're crying," he said.
"I'm fine." He took hold of her arm and turned her gently around and asked,
"What is it?"
"I'm just scared, is all." It was the last time they would sit together at this dinner table. Ethan looked at Teresa, at his son. He stood. He raised his water glass. "I would like to say a couple words to the two most important people in my life." Already his voice trembled. "I'm not perfect. In fact, I'm pretty far from it. But there is nothing I wouldn't do to protect you, Teresa. And you, Ben. Nothing. I don't know what tomorrow holds, or the day after, or the day after that." He scowled against the gathering tears. "I'm just so grateful that we're together in this moment." Teresa's eyes glistened. As he sat down, shaken, she reached over and took hold of his hand. It was the last night he would sleep on a soft mattress. He and Teresa were intertwined, buried under a mountain of blankets. The hour was late, but they were both still awake. He could feel her eyelashes blinking against his chest.
"Can you believe this is our life?" she whispered.
"Hasn't set in yet. Don't think it ever will."
"What if this doesn't work? What if we all die?"
"That's a real possibility."
"There's a part of me," she said, "that wants to play it safe. Maybe we do only have 4 years left. So, what if we make them great? Savor every moment, every bite of food, every breath of air, every kiss, every day we aren't hungry or thirsty or running for our lives.
But then we definitely die. Our species is finished."
"Maybe that isn't such a bad thing. We had our chance. We failed."
"We have to keep trying. Keep fighting."
"Why?"
"Because that's what we do."
"I don't know if I'm cut out for this."
The door to their bedroom creaked open.
"Mom? Dad?"
Ben's voice.
"What's up, buddy?"
Teresa asked.
"I can't sleep." "Come get in bed with us."
Ben crawled across the covers and burrowed down between them.
"Is that better?" Ethan asked.
"Yeah," Ben said. "Much better."
They all lay in the dark, no one talking. Ben dozed off first, then Teresa. And still Ethan couldn't sleep. He sat up on one elbow and watched his family, watched them all through the night, until the sky lightened in the windows and dawn broke on their final day in Wayward Pines. In every house throughout the valley, phones began to ring. Ethan walked in from the kitchen holding a cup of black coffee and answered their rotary phone in the living room on the third ring. Even though he knew the message that was coming, it still twisted his stomach up in knots as he held the receiver to his ear and listened to his own voice say, "People of Wayward Pines, it's time." Ethan held the front door open for Teresa as she stepped out onto the porch, carrying a cardboard box filled with framed photographs of their family, the only material possessions they had decided were worth taking. It was a beautiful morning for leaving. Up and down their block, other families were emerging from their houses, some carrying small boxes filled with their most precious belongings, others with nothing but the clothes on their backs. The Burks moved down the porch, through the front yard, and out into the street. All the residents converged on Main and moved as one toward the forest on the southern outskirts of town. Ethan spotted Kate up ahead, a backpack slung over her shoulder,
walking with Adam Hassler. Caught a stab of something he couldn't quite wrap his head around, thinking maybe some emotions were too complex. But wherever this one fell on the color wheel, it was definitely in the neighborhood of nostalgia. He let go of Teresa's hand and said, "I'll be right back." Ethan caught up with his former partner as the group walked past the Aspen House. "Morning," he said. She glanced over, smiled. "Ready to do this?" "It's insane, right?"
"Little bit."
Hassler said, "Hey, Ethan." A month in civilization had done wonders for the man. Hassler had put on enough weight to look almost like his old self again. "Adam, how you guys holding up?" "All right, I guess." Kate said, "I feel like I'm about to get on this terrifying ride, you know? No idea where it's going." They passed the hospital, Ethan thinking back to that first time he'd woken up to the smiling face of Nurse Pam. Those first days he'd wandered in a daze around this town, confused, still trying to call home, and unable to reach his family. The first time he'd seen Kate, 9 years older than she should have been. What a journey. Ethan looked at Kate. "It's going to get crazy in a little while. I was thinking maybe we should say goodbye here." Kate stopped in the middle of the road, the last residents of Wayward Pines moving past them. The way she smiled, the early sun in her face, eyes squinting, she looked like the Kate of old, of Seattle, of the worst and the best mistake he'd ever made. They embraced, fiercely.
"Thank you for coming to look for me all those years ago," Kate said. "I'm sorry it ended up like this."
"I wouldn't change any of it."
"You did the right thing," she whispered. "Never doubt it."
Teresa reached them. She smiled at Kate. She went to Hassler and hugged him. As they came apart, she asked,
"Do you guys want to walk with us for a while?"
"We'd love to," Adam said. Ethan wondered, as he stood there with his wife, his son, his former mistress, and the man who had once betrayed him, is this what a family looks like in this new world? Because no matter what had happened in the past, in this harrowing present, everybody needed everybody. As the last of the crowd pushed on past them, they lingered where the main road out of Wayward Pines entered the darkness of the forest. Behind them, the town stood abandoned, the morning sun glaring down against the trees, the storefront glass shimmering on the west side of Maine. They took in all those picket-fenced Victorians, the surrounding cliffs, the turning aspen trees as the wind stripped their branches of the last golden leaves. In this moment, it was so idyllic. Pilcher's brilliant, mad creation. At length, they turned away and moved on down the road together, into the woods, away from Wayward Pines. Ethan sat at the main console in the surveillance center, Alan on one side, Francis Levin on the other.
"What exactly is the point of this message?" Levin asked.
"In case someone stumbles across this place," Ethan said.
"I find that highly unlikely."
"Do you know what you want to say?" Alan asked.
"I wrote something down last night."
Alan's fingers danced across the touchscreen.
"Ready when you are," he said.
"Let's do this."
"We're recording."
Ethan took the scrap of paper out of his back pocket, unfolded it, and leaned into the microphone. He said his piece. When he'd finished, Alan stopped the recording.
"Well said, Sheriff."
Above them, the bank of 25 monitors still streamed a rotating series of surveillance feeds from the valley. The empty corridors of the hospital basement, the empty hallway in the school, the empty park, vacated homes, abandoned streets. Ethan looked over at Francis Levin.
"We ready?" he asked.
"All non-essential systems have been powered down."
"Everyone's prepped?"
"It's already underway."
As Ethan walked alone down the level one corridor, the overhead lights winked out one by one. When he reached the sliding glass doors that opened into the Ark, he glanced back down the passage as the last light at the far end of the corridor went dark. Already it was colder, the heating and ventilation systems running on idle. The stone floor of the great cavern was freezing against his bare feet. It was frigid inside.